Welcome back to Observation. Before we start in this, our second segment here, there was an auction. But I understand the auction is still ongoing, Kirk. And Scott, you still can bid on the gun that was used by Zimmerman to kill Trayvon Martin. I understand the current high bid for it. Now, this is for a pistol, is some $60 million.
What?
Yeah. Okay. 60, they're having an auction online to sell the gun that was used to kill Trayvon Martin. And there's somebody out there has driven the price up to over $60 million.
Why would
now,
you...
I wouldn't want that gun. Listen, Trayvon Martin brought on his own death, and Zimmerman's a scumbag. There isn't a good side in that argument. There are just two really, really terrible people. One of which is dead. The other one, which is just taking up space on the earth and is walking dead. But to want to have a weapon in your possession that took a life, why would you want that? You know, it's like you go to the Smithsonian and you see proudly displayed the Enola Gay. What, 50 million people died as a result of the weapon it dropped? You know, I don't want to be anywhere near it. So it's amazing what people will spend their money on. You know, we haven't had a single dollar invested in any of the websites that present Yahweh's testimony. And yet there's some numbskull out there that's willing to spend 60 million bones?
I want to know how he got his money to begin with. Like if you just have 60 million and you're like, yep, I need that gun. Like, you can buy a brand new gun that's never been shot by anybody other than yourself.
Yeah, for anywhere more. From anywhere from $25 to $125.
For much, much less. You could even buy all the utensils that you need to build your own gun for less than $60 million. You could buy the machine, you could buy, you know, you could hire, you could probably hire a guy to design a gun for you.
Oh, it's a huge percentage of guns now that are being made by the 3D printers.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
You can, for $10,000 or so, you can buy a 3D printer. The programs are available free online, and you can go and print your own gun. And what good is it going to do you? You know, when as he always says, a third of the earth is going to be uninhabitable as a result of a nuclear holocaust between the superpowers, what good is the gun going to do you? What good is a gun in the midst of an earthquake or a hurricane or a tornado?
Yeah. If you run into the house, what are you going to save? That one?
Is it going to find you water?
Yeah.
Does it because it cooked meals for you? I mean, there's so much other stuff that you should worry about.
No, personally, I don't get it. We have reached the point in the fifth chapter of Observations for Our Time where Yahweh specifically said that all of these horrible things that he had been exposing in reference to a lone individual man leading the parade of ignorant and irrational people to the whore's house, and this would be the whore of Babylon, that individual, well, he said of him, it is the way, the Derek of Shaul. It is the way of Shaul. It's Paul of the Christian New Testament, descending into the impending doom surrounding the lightless inner rooms of the whore's house and of the plague of death. Now, there's reason there's two different things listed here. Those like Paul who perpetrated the whore's most popular religion, Christianity, he's going to find himself in the lightless rooms of in Satan's home, known popularly as hell in Yahweh's parlance, Sheol. And there are those that have been duped by him, the billions of Christians in the world today, they're going to find themselves plagued by death. They're going to die. That's why there's two different things listed here. But both are the way of Shaul. You know, it's we've made our way all the way through Proverbs 6 and 7. And all the way through, there has been only one person in all of human history that meets the criterion for this horrible person that God is specifically saying that he hates, and he views what he created as an abomination, whom he associates with the whore of Babylon. And at the end of the seventh Marshal proverb, he says, and oh, by the way, his name is Shaul, the Christian Paul.
Kind of hard to hide from that.
It is pretty hard to hide from that. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to conclude our review of Proverbs 6 and 7 with a review of the most, I think, telling prophecy, most specifically revealing prophecy in the whole of Yahweh's Torah and prophets. And that would be Chabaouk in the first and second chapters. Now, regarding Shaul, the most infamous and influential man in human history, Yahweh offered a haunting prediction. How many years do you think that that Chabaouk wrote in advance of Paul's first letter? That would be to the Galatians.
Well, I actually know, but so you go ahead and tell them. But
666 years.
Special number, huh?
It is.
Man, man, man.
Man, man, man. Yeah, I Paul say, yes, I Paul say, but I Paul say, 666 years prior to Paul's penning his first letter, Galatians, which was written by the devil's advocate, circa 52 CE. In his opening statement, Chabaouk, the prophet appointed by Yahweh for this mission, revealed the following. Towards you, and this is Yahweh, there are cruel lies and a great injustice, a proliferation of errors, which lead to death and destruction. So you must continually withhold salvation.
Wow. Think of that.
Think of that. First of all, think of that, that God is saying that there are cruel lies and a great injustice, a proliferation of errors regarding him. Now, think of that for a moment. Now, the only group of people that proliferate a great injustice and errors regarding God are the religious. So he's saying that the religious are perpetrating cruel lies and a great injustice as a result of a proliferation of errors. And he's saying that the consequence of all this, it's not a victimless crime, leads to death and destruction. So you must continually withhold salvation. That's a line that that Yahweh affirms in the Proverbs and then again and through the prophets, which is that he cannot save the religious.
Yeah. And he's insisting that he does it, which is would be odd for a Christian to think of, because they think he's going to save everybody.
Yeah. Now, so, well, certainly save the religious. That's what he said. That's what Christians believe. They're going to save the religious. What God is saying is exactly the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I have to withhold salvation. He can't save the religious. He cannot save the religious. And that's really stunning when you realize that that's what's being said here, is that you must withhold salvation because of religion. Now, can God save a person who commits adultery?
Absolutely.
Can God save a person who commits an act of homosexuality?
There's nothing you can do that he couldn't save you from once you turn away.
Except there are a list of things that you can do that he cannot save you from, But behaviors like killing, you can kill and still be saved, right?
Yes.
Doe did.
Yes.
You can lie and still be saved. Doe did.
Mm-hmm.
You can commit adultery and still be saved. Boy, I mean, Doe was a professional in the adultery business. Promiscuity is the big thing that, you know, Christians say, oh, you know, the wages of sin is death. You know, that big fixation with promiscuity. Dode, who God says is perfect, I mean, you couldn't be more promiscuous than Dode. I don't think Dode even knew the names of half the women in his harem. I mean, it's unbelievably promiscuous. He says, so God can save you from that. What God can't save you from, though, is negating the importance of his name.
Yes. Correct.
And he can't save you from religion.
And we know that because in the Ten Statements, the first stone, he says these three things.
Right.
I can't forgive. I won't forgive.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't forgive. Won't forgive. So towards you, yeah, well, there are cruel lies and a great injustice, a proliferation of errors, which lead to death and destruction. So you must constantly, continuously withhold salvation. Lies and injustice are conspicuous to me. And they are related. So he, which you will soon identify as Shaul, has been and continues to be contentious, taunting and quarrelsome, insulting in his dispute, harboring hostile opposition while presenting an entirely different perception regarding the proper standard, ultimately putting in man in conflict with God. And so he brings forward, advocates, and promotes strife and dissension, even argumentative objections with regard to vindication.
That's right out of the book of Acts.
Yeah, man. Galatians and Romans.
And the whole bit.
Yeah, the whole bit. I mean, that's the thing that is so revealing to me, so astonishing in a way to me, regarding Pauline Christianity, is that its basic premise is preposterous. Paul taunts God. He calls his old system, which became known as the Old Testament, pornography. Poneros in Greek. He says that God's impotent and he cannot save based upon his Torah. He says that his Torah enslaves. He claimed to speak for the very God that he insulted and demeaned, which is what this is saying. What are the odds that God, A, is in fact incompetent and impotent, and then found this buffoon and decided that, you know, I'm going to inspire him to contradict everything that I have said and to come up with an entirely different plan. Oh, by the way, the plan that he comes up with will be his own.
Well, even if that were so, if you could buy that, when did God become competent again then?
Well, yeah, that's what I said, but that's the whole thing about that. First, he says that, you know, his inspiration came from God. So how did this God who was incompetent become competent? But think about Paul's letters. Paul's letters are, but I say. So what that means is to believe Christianity, you'd have to believe that God was incapable of creating a plan that could save anyone. God was incapable of doing what he intended. So he gave up. And he appointed Paul to come up with a plan that was entirely different, that contradicted his own, and that the Pauline plan is somehow going to prevail when God's failed. I mean, it's so preposterous to be a Christian. You wonder why there is one Christian on the planet, much less 2.5 billion of them. And it's the prophet is saying, the injustice and is conspicuous. The lies are conspicuous. I mean, you read Paul's letters, and they're filled with contradictions. He claims to be insane. He claims to be demon-possessed. He claims to be murderous. He claims to be a sexual pervert. He claims to be inspired by the God that he contradicts. I mean, you don't have to be a genius.
No.
The lies are conspicuous. And he's in a quarrelsome and an insulting dispute with God himself.
So why do you think no one ever challenges this? I know you do, we do.
Yeah. What, but one in a million people does? They do?
Why does no one look at that and say, hey, even as I do more and more translation, I keep saying, well, wait a minute, that's not what it says here, and all the lexicons agree that this is what it means, and that's what he said. Uh-huh. Oh, why does no one challenge that? I mean, maybe a rhetorical question. I mean,
yeah,
I guess I'm perplexed.
Well, I think the sixth proverb, Mashal, explained that, which is that the vast preponderance of people are apathetic.
Yeah,
their eyes are closed. Their minds are closed. They make pledges of allegiance to just go along, and they never bother to think it through. Because you do have to step back, gain a little perspective, and actually think it through to recognize how preposterous all this is. But most people just don't bother. They just go along. And, the religious have made it extraordinarily difficult to oppose them, just like the politically correct have made it extraordinarily painful. You know, if you're going to do something that's not politically correct, they're going to publicly crucify you. Yeah. You know, and if you speak out against Muhammad, the Quran, or Islam in an Islamic country, they're going to torture you and then kill you. You know, when the Catholic Church had supreme power and you challenged anything regarding them, no matter how perverted they were,
torture, burn at the stake.
Exactly right. They torture you first, kill you second. It's they make it difficult,
like
right?
I'm just stunned,
yeah.
Like everybody else that reads it the first time. I continue to be, wow.
Yeah. So likewise, this is now Chabaouk 1:4.
Mm-hmm.
So likewise, therefore, he has incapacitated and paralyzed the purpose of the Torah. He failed to uplift and to convey the glorious internal and eternal approach to vindication, whereby disputes are justly resolved. For indeed, wickedness encompasses and guilt abounds, hemming in the hopeful, in opposition to the righteous and innocent. Therefore, in this manner, his judgment regarding his own ongoing means to vindication is perverted, distorted, twisted, and false. Now, there's only one person in all of human history that specifically sought to incapacitate the purpose of the Torah and then to replace it with his own plan of salvation. Only one.
Correct.
You know, you look at the villains throughout time. And, you know, God's list of villains would only include those who had an influence either on Israel or the chosen people. And so you're going to be limited there, you know. Julius Caesar may have been a scallywag. Yeah, Alexander the Great was an egotistic maniac, but they didn't have any influence on Israel or the chosen people, so they'd be excluded from the list. But they wouldn't be included anyway because they had nothing to say about the Torah. I mean, Hadrian was a real scumbag, but he didn't incapacitate the Torah. He didn't seek to do that.
He's just a conqueror.
Yeah, I mean, he burned every copy he could find, but trying to incapacitate and paralyze his purpose? No, he was clueless to what the Torah even said. And, you know, Rabbi Akiva had very little to say about the Torah. His commentary was on the Talmud. Maimonides, the Rambam, you know, the one that codified the principles of rabbinic Judaism, in his books, the Mishnah Torah was not on the Torah, but on the Talmud. You know, Muhammad didn't know enough about the Torah even to be dangerous. His corruptions, too, were of the Babylonian Talmud. Huge sections of the Quran are citations from the Babylonian Talmud. They aren't from the Torah. So, if you're looking for who he's talking about, there's only one person that specifically sought to annul the Torah, and that is the fulcrum upon which Paul's letters pivot. It's the Torah. So he incapacitated and paralyzed the purpose of the Torah. You know, what he said was essentially, and in fact, the first comment he makes about the Torah is that the Torah cannot save. What's the purpose of the Torah?
The purpose is to save. It's where the mitzvah is. It's where the instructions for the Moed Mikre are.
Yeah. Does the Torah say, you know, since Dod violated one of the Torah's instructions, he cannot be saved?
That's absurd. Yeah, because you couldn't count him. He said, on my hair is on my head.
Right. Correct. So the Torah does not exist to exonerate the perfect.
No, it's for flawed people like me.
Yeah, exactly right. It exists to perfect and to immortalize and to adopt and to enrich and empower flawed people like you and me. Even people as flawed as Scott.
Well, even them too, yeah. Think about that, but absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that is the purpose of it. So, likewise and therefore, if you were a Christian, the purpose of the Torah, which is to, you know, and I want to be a little bit careful here.
Okay.
The primary purpose of the Torah is not to save us.
No, it's to find our way home.
So. Yeah, it's to provide the way home. It is to provide the way home. It is to provide a means of extricating ourselves from the foibles of man and to unite ourselves with the benefits of being part of Yahweh's family. And so it is to immortalize us, to perfect us, to enrich us, to empower us, to adopt us. That's the purpose of the Torah. So it's to enumerate and to present the conditions for participating in the covenant and the benefits of making that choice. To introduce us to Yahweh so that we get to know him and to explain the choices that we can make that are most beneficial and the choices that we can make that are most detrimental. A salvation is a byproduct of those things. But since Pauline Christianity, specifically in his first letter, says that the covenant memorialized on Mount Sinai, which would be the one and only covenant of Yahweh, the one with Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob, with Yisrael, and thus with us, same one that he had with Noah.
Right.
That the covenant that was memorialized on Mount Sinai, which would be the Torah's covenant, was with Hagar and enslaved.
Which is impossible.
He in effect incapacitate and paralyze the primary purpose of the Torah, which is to introduce us to the covenant and to Yahweh and empower us with the information we need to participate in one to meet the other. That's what it did. And you couldn't be more clear since he has specifically said that it incapacitated and paralyzed the purpose of the Torah. And he said he failed to uplift and to convey the glorious and eternal approach to vindication. Well, the approach to vindication is the seven Moed Mikre.
Right, and we're celebrating Shavuot today.
Right.
That's about we did the early one. So
yeah.
How would I know about that if I couldn't get to the Torah?
Correct. Yeah, how would you know? You would. So he negated its purpose.
There's sit down and talk with Yahweh. Thank you.
Yeah, according to Yahweh, there's only one way to vindication. It's the seven-step plan that he not only articulated, but that he enabled. You know, when you associate Yahusha with the cross, and to say that the cross is the source of life, as opposed to associating Yahusha with the Passover lamb and realizing that the Passover lamb is the source of life, you paralyze the purpose of the Torah. And so he's saying that Paul's statements are perverted, distorted, twisted, and false. Then this goes on to say, talk about his audience. Who did Paul claim he had 100% exclusive on from God himself?
The Goyim.
Yeah.
The Gentiles.
Yeah, witnesses among the Gentiles, those who are actually observant and thoughtful, are astonished and astounded, amazed and surprised that a deed, a work will be and now has been done in your days that you will not find credible, even when it is written down and he is held accountable. He's speaking about us.
Yeah, we're grappling with it. We're just stunned.
Right, stunned. I mean, I'm absolutely astonished and astounded, amazed and surprised that indeed that a work that was done by Paul has been found by anyone to be credible. Or that, and when people hear it, they don't even understand how it is that Paul could be accountable in this way. Then it says, this is the seventh statement, sixth and seventh. Rather, look to me, paying attention to me. This is Yahweh speaking in first person. Standing upright, established and restored against Chaldea. What is Chaldea? I said a name for
Babylon.
Babylon.
The schemes of Babylon.
Correct. The corrupting and confusing nature of Babylon. Restored against Babylon. You know, when Yosha is cited in, at the end of Revelation as saying, come out of her, my people, what's the context of that?
It's Babylon.
It's Babylon. When he says at the end, just before his return, Babylon has fallen.
Yeah,
doesn't that mean that Babylon exists as a major, in fact, it is the major, it's the single most pervasive counter option. A negative influence in the world at the time of Yosha's return. So this nation that was destroyed by the Persians, the Median Persians, millennia ago, what it wrought on the world is so pervasive that God's declaration before his return is that it finally has fallen. So what is Babylon if it is the most pervasive counter-influence against Yosha?
But it is political and economic and religious.
Yeah, and most specifically, Christianity.
Yeah, oh, Christianity, of course, yeah.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, in the discussion of Babylon and the horror of Babylon, Yosha in the Revelation walks us right through it. I mean, he talks about the emperors in Babylon, so that you would, which were the Romans,
right?
Of this beast that became the whore of Babylon. He talked about the Roman emperors. He talked about the city on seven hills, which is Rome. Mm-hmm. He talks about its effect of growing out of then Daniel of growing out of the Roman Empire, even in Revelation, growing out of the Roman Empire, which the Roman Catholic Church did.
Right.
You know, and the Roman Catholic Church is Christianity.
Yeah.
So that is the.
I like your phrase you always like to use about Protestantism is just Catholicism light.
Yeah.
Because there's only a few little wrinkles that are not so.
That is correct.
You know, not in sync completely.
Yeah. Same perverted New Testament.
Yeah.
Same false name for God.
Go to the cross.
Same cross. Same negation of. Yahweh's name. Same fixation on a non-existent, non-godly church. Still the fixation on the cross, Sunday worship, Christmas, Easter, the Trinity, all that stuff. No, it's just, it's not even a very light version of Christianity. It still has almost all of the negative calories. So the witnesses among the Gentiles. Rather look to me, God says, paying attention to me, standing upright, established, restored against Chaldea, synonym for Babylon. Where did Yahweh ask Abraham to leave?
Babylon.
Yeah, Ur of the Chaldeans, right?
Ur of the Chaldeans.
Which is Babylon. The country of heathens and pagans that is detestable and poisonous, impetuous and senseless. He makes his way to the vast expanses of the world as if an inheritance, taking possession of inhabited places that are not his. Terrible, dreadful, and intimidating. This from his decision, the lofty status he sought, and the plan he advances and spreads. You know, the people who tried to annul the Torah and who spoke in this way, only one is known for his journeys through the known world. That's Paul.
Yes, every map in the Bible. to have them all. This is his journeys.